This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the betting tools and content we've got at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst JBT has previews, picks and predictions up for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've got daily write-ups in the NHL, MLB, WNBA, plenty of NFL offseason content as well. This week, our own Michael Lombardi, he's got a column covering the interim coach dilemma, breaking down why interim coaches tend to struggle after transitioning to the full-time head coaching gig, and how to approach Antonio Pierce and the Raiders in the betting market. Check it all out today at VSiN.com. Alongside Mike Somich today, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. And while we're on the NFL, might as well go right to it because OTAs are well underway. And with that, Mike, we hear, you know, so-and-so has not seen a ball hit the ground at practice, and Aaron Rodgers looks amazing, and Dak Prescott is there, but CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons isn't on site at OTAs. What are the important things? Like, what are you looking at during OTAs that you feel like you can actually evaluate and use as a better, and what do you just have to put to the side?
A lot of it I just put to the side. I'm not too worried about OTAs. I'm more interested in how rookies are doing, how rookies are developing, what players who I think are competing for roster spots are doing versus the stars. Like, I trust that you're going to see, you know, someone like Tua, for instance, who has been there for some, missed some. I'm not as worried about him coming in and clicking with the wide receivers, right? He played with his two main targets last year. You've got Beckham coming in, but Beckham's a veteran, should be able to fit into that offense well. I'm more concerned about how guys like Drake May are doing, how guys like Bo Nix are doing. What are we getting from a coach soundbite perspective of those guys? Because they're the ones who are going to hinge some of my bets once we get into the early weeks and then later weeks of the season. So for me, it's not the stars. It's the younger guys and the roster spot guys that I'm more concerned about.
Yeah, it's interesting and definitely important to keep an eye on, especially for those guys. Like you said, Drake May, and that's one that stands out to me so much because while so many of us anticipate that it's going to be Jacoby Brissett out the gate, Drake May has a lot to learn, as his head coach Gerard Mayo has said, but for how long? Like, at what point do we anticipate seeing Drake May? So all interesting points well taken. You mentioned Tua, he and Trevor Lawrence, both two players that are going through whether or not and when they're going to get their contracts. One guy who already figured his out was Jared Goff, and the Detroit Lions are a team that for the first time in a long, long time, have real, genuine expectations. We're talking Super Bowl expectations. Their head coach, Dan Campbell, was asked about just that at his press conference yesterday. Take a listen.
I don't see bust. I see Super Bowl. I don't know what the bust is. So
Super Bowl or nothing.
It's, you know, here's what I know, man. We all know what every team ought to have that, right? Every team ought to be like, man, what are you playing for? You're playing for a Super Bowl. So we're no different than that. But I think, yeah, we know that now. We work backwards from there. And so you got to set yourself up no different than last year. Certain things you got to do to really make that valid, you know, make that a reality.
And he's right, right? That should be the goal for every team. But for this team, it feels like it's a realistic possibility. I know he says Super Bowl or bust. I don't know what the bust is. But obviously they made it to an NFC championship a year ago, had it in their grasp. And then it was a historic comeback from the 49ers that took away what was a historic season from the Lions. So what do you think about this team this year?
I love the Lions this year. I think they set up phenomenally to be able to do well in the NFC. I need to go out and I need to buy a drum and I need to paint Jared Goff for MVP on it, because I've been banging the Jared Goff MVP drum so loud across this network. He's 40-1 right now. That's a wild price to me. This is a Lions team that starts out with a relatively easy schedule. It's an offense that's bringing everybody back, including Ben Johnson, the OC, who I don't think any of us thought was coming back during the playoffs last year. He ends up back on the roster. Goff gets paid. To me, this is a Lions offense that should be able to do very well against their early opponents. And specifically, their setup is beautiful because they only have to play three outdoor games. One of those, Green Bay in November. You've got to Chicago. You've got San Francisco outdoors later in the season. But outside of those two games, they should never have a weather issue in any game, which is a big thing that we talk about with Jared Goff and with this offense. On top of that, I love what they did in the draft. They go out, they address the cornerback position, they add some defense as well. To me, this is a Lions team that is just ready to roll in this spot. And you look at your 49ers, Stormy, and the schedule that they had set up. This is a situation where they're coming in, they have to take on four good teams coming off byes. The Lions have to be focused on the one seed in the NFC. I think they have a very nice path to get it. And if they do, all of a sudden, they're playing at home throughout the entire playoffs. And we saw what an edge that was last year. I think it's all systems go for Detroit this year. And I'm surprised to say that because I didn't love them last year. But coming into the regular season, after looking at the schedule, I think Detroit is going to be the one seed in the NFC.
Well, and I love that you mentioned those three true outdoor road games, because the numbers speak for themselves when it comes to Jared Goff indoors and outdoors. His quarterback rating inside, 104. His rating outside, 87. Last year specifically, outdoors, 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Indoors, 23 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So, again, it speaks for itself. Jared Goff, he's got a full arsenal of weapons. Amon-Ra St. Brown gets paid. He's got Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, Sam Laporta. Apparently, Dan Campbell says Jameson Williams is a man on a mission and has been the most improved player since spring practices have begun. He was number 2 in passing last year, to support your MVP theory. The offense as a whole, number 3 in the league. There's a lot of reason for optimism, but what does that mean now in terms of betting the team? Are you interested in them to win a second straight division after having not done it for 30 years? Their win total is 10.5. They tied for the second best record last year with 12. Are they going to get over that number again to set themselves up in that position? Those are the things I'm wondering. In terms of their win total specifically, do you lean over then based on your thought process of them gunning for that high seed in the NFC?
Yeah, I like their over quite a bit at 10.5. I think this is a team that could start out 7-1, 8-0, somewhere in that range. And if you start out 7-1 or 8-0, if you want to come back, you're going to be able to get an under win total sitting there at 13.5 and get a middle between that 11, 12, and 13 win number. I think this early schedule just breaks perfectly for them. The one concern I have around Detroit is that the early bye. I believe it's week 4, week 5 that they have the bye there. That's a little bit of a concern because injuries can pile up heading into the playoffs. I do like them to win the division quite a bit, plus 150. This is just an interesting case where you've got a Lions team who I think got better in the offseason, but you look at the hype around the Bears, the hype around the Packers. They're taking money that's basically betting on the come, right, versus betting on what we know, where you can bet on what we know with this Lions team, which is they're going to be very good and should be better than they were last year. If that's the case, plus 150, a nice price in the division.
Yeah, plus 150 in the NFC North, plus 550, second shortest shot in the NFC behind only San Francisco. Another person on the mic yesterday, Giants quarterback Daniel Jones, as he enters the final year of guaranteed money in the big contract that he signed last offseason, told reporters he's feeling good coming off the ACL and that there's no doubt he'll be ready to go for the start of the season. What's your perspective on Daniel Jones and the Giants? Because obviously there's all the rumbling and talk about the draft, about how they wanted Drake May. The Patriots weren't willing to deal that pick for them to get up there. Now, Drew Locke could be a realistic starter week 1. Daniel Jones says he's ready to go. I'm very excited for this weird offseason hard knock situation following New York, but what do you think?
You know, I think I might be one of the last people who doesn't think Daniel Jones is awful. I thought the situation last year was absolutely atrocious for him. That offensive line couldn't block anybody. If you remember, like the opening game against the Cowboys, he had less than like, it didn't seem like there was anyone blocking for him, period. He was just under pressure constantly. There's no weapons on the outside last year. All of a sudden, there's some weapons there. You add Neighbors. You've got Waller. I realize you lost Barkley. I think that's probably the biggest loss here for the Giants with how much they relied on him. But I don't hate this Giants team, and I don't hate Daniel Jones' chance to be successful. Obviously, coming off the injury, a pretty big concern. ACL, a major injury there for him. But I look back to what he did 2 years ago with Brian Daboll inside this system. I think Daboll's a phenomenal coach who has had nothing to work with for 2 seasons. We'll see what he's able to do now that he has Neighbors, now that defense should be a little bit better. The ceiling for him is 3rd in the division, which is unfortunate. But I do think they're going to be better than they were last year.
Win total 6.5, and you are getting plus money on that over. They had 6 wins last year, so if they're better, you think that they'll get that. There you go. And to your point, the offensive line did not help the cause for Daniel Jones and his struggles early on before he got hurt. Allowed the 2nd most sacks in NFL history on the year as a whole with 85. Jones in those 6 starts was sacked 30 times. And now, you mentioned Saquon Barkley. He goes from that offensive line to the best one by far that he's ever had in his career. And he said at Eagles OTAs that he feels like a rookie again. He's so reinvigorated.
It's new. I like the Eagles team. Just going out there trying to learn the system. Biggest thing, you know, that struck me is our first 7-on-7 huddle. You see AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, and Jalen Hurts. It's not a bad group to be out there with, and that's not even including offensive linemen.
Yeah, not a bad situation.
No, not bad at all. I mean, it's a star-studded fantasy roster there in Philadelphia. And I feel like Philadelphia's a little undervalued. People remember how the season ended, but they started 11-1 last year and then had to try and run that gauntlet that we all expected them to struggle with. I actually upgraded them 2.5 points in the offseason because I felt like their year-end rating was not anywhere near what they should be when they start this season. I think you're going to see a lot different Philly team, a lot more like we saw 2 years ago than we saw last year.
Yeah, and this is 20 straight seasons without a repeat division winner. So maybe you do just cross out the Cowboys and say Eagles after that 10-1 start last year when you should have had the division, you'll get back on top. They're a plus 115 favorite in the NFC East. And if Barkley really does feel like his rookie season, I'm sure the Eagles would feel good if they gave him, if he got another 1,300 yards and 11 touchdowns like he did that year. We're going to hit the break. It wouldn't be the Lombardi line if we didn't bring a game to the fold. So Bettor's Choice coming up next. Get ready.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5 and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Alongside Mike Somich, Stormy Bond, and Tony with you as we continue diving into our football conversation. The AFC North, probably the toughest division in all of football, led by the Baltimore Ravens and defending MVP Lamar Jackson. Let's get into it with a little bit of help from Cordell Woodland, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Ravens and Orioles beat reporter 105.7 The Fan, host of Shaking It Up Sports, joining us now. Appreciate you. And hey, have you seen Lamar Jackson in person? Is the weight really off? I feel like we're having the great weight debate with Lamar Jackson this week.
Yeah, it's definitely been that way. We have seen Lamar Jackson. He was out at OTAs on Wednesday, and we got to speak to him afterwards. And he was definitely asked quite a few questions about his weight. And, you know, he was like, he wanted to get back to being more agile. He wanted to, you know, pick up some speed, and that was important to him. And I think we've seen Lamar now, you know, win an MVP with two different body types and really two different play styles. And I asked him on Wednesday, when's the last time he felt as agile as he does right now? And he said, you know, pretty much before COVID. So that was quite a bit ago. And I do think that Lamar wants to get back to being able to change the game with his legs when he gets in the open field. That's never changed in terms of him being able to do different things with his legs. But if you look at Lamar Jackson this year, a lot of the plays that he made with his legs, a lot of those highlights ended with him throwing the ball. And I think he definitely loves to do that. But I also think he wants the ability to kind of separate himself from defenses. And it's honestly been a few seasons since we've seen Lamar do that on a consistent basis.
I got to say, Cordell, that is a scary thought. A faster and more agile Lamar Jackson after what we've seen from him, even last year when he was so dynamic with his legs. Now, with this Ravens team, one of the things that jumped out to me was the schedule. You've got three tough road games in the first 5 weeks. Also have Buffalo at home and that late bye. What have we heard out of the Ravens side here about specifically the schedule and then that start with the four tough games in the first 5 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're ready for it. John Harbaugh and those guys, we've talked to them about the schedule, and I want to say that Zach Ord, new defensive coordinator, he was asked about, you know, the gauntlet of quarterbacks that they're going to see to start this season. Patrick Mahomes week one, Dak Prescott week three, Josh Allen week four, and then you got Joe Burrow week five. So, you know, they'll have their hands full this year for sure, but they're a team that doesn't shy away from any challenge when they, you know, they have Lamar Jackson on their side, so they feel like as long as he's available, they have a chance to win every game. I think, you know, it's a good thing that they're getting this Chiefs game out of the way in week one because there's no pressure. It's, you know, it's not like you're having to play this team back in November, playing them in December, and it's a lot on the line. Oh, and then you still have, you know, the storylines hanging over your head from last year's AFC Championship game. So really no pressure in my mind to go play Kansas City week one. And the Ravens are really good usually in September. So we'll see what happens. But I don't think there's any easy weeks in the NFL.
The Ravens, a 3-point underdog in that game at Arrowhead, total 47.5. But it's a point well taken that you make about the quarterback specifically that the Ravens are going to have to face in those first 5 weeks. Without their defensive coordinator that led them to such high highs a season ago, like, what are your expectations for this defense and how they're built to compete with some of those QBs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I'm still trying to figure out myself, because Mike McDonald, in my opinion, was the best defensive coordinator in football last year. You look at not just the scheme that the Ravens played, but his in-game adjustments. That's what I thought was the best thing about him. I mean, you look at last season and you look at how they destroyed the Lions. You look at how they destroyed the Seahawks when they came to town, how they took it to the San Francisco 49ers and the Dolphins late in the season. I had never seen so many offensive coordinators and quarterbacks look lost against this defense the way it did last year. So there are a lot of questions about this team. They lost Patrick Queen. They lost a couple of corners. They lost Jadeveon Clowney, who was second on this team in sacks last year. So definitely a ton of questions just about the pass rush in itself. But the Ravens seem confident. And one thing John Harbaugh has said is that this defensive scheme is something that has been built over time. It's not like Mike McDonald came in and this was his thing, and now that he's gone, the scheme left with him. No, Mike McDonald was a part of the people that orchestrated this scheme. Zach Orr, the new defensive coordinator, he's a former player for the Ravens. He's been a linebacker coach for them. He knows this scheme in and out. He already has a great relationship with the players. So we'll see. I think naturally they were going to regress because they were so good last year. I think that was going to happen regardless. I do think there will be some early hiccups because Zach Orr has never called plays before, so he'll have to figure that part out. But overall, I think they're still very talented on that side of the ball, led by Justin Madubuike, Roquan Smith, and Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Kyle Hamilton back. Obviously got injured later in the season, but he was phenomenal at strong safety. So excited to see what he's able to do there. Now, the key acquisition in the offseason, Derrick Henry at the running back position, seems like a great fit for this offense. But what I think I'm most excited about is to see what they decide to do, or what the Ravens decide to do with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely both on the field at the same time. We weren't able to get to see that a ton just because of the injuries that we saw to Mark Andrews. What are you seeing right now from the tight end perspective? And are we going to see a lot of two tight end sets with both these guys running loose over the middle?
Well, that's the hope. That's the hope out here in Baltimore, because, I mean, like you said, they've got two dynamic tight ends. We know what Mark Andrews can do. He's a former All-Pro, and Isaiah Likely the last 2 years has looked great. The problem is he's only really looked great when Mark Andrews isn't there. So that's been kind of the number one thing for Todd Monken this offseason, is to how is he going to get the most out of both of those guys when they're on the field at the same time. You look back to the AFC Championship game last year, Isaiah Likely was pretty much a no-show. Mark Andrews as well, for the most part. I mean, and that was his first game back. And with that happening, Isaiah Likely kind of faded away. They can't have that happen if this offense is going to reach their peak. And I asked offensive coordinator Todd Monken about that yesterday, you know, and he said he's confident that they'll be able to get the most out of these guys, that they're still tweaking their system on a daily basis. These are two talented guys, and the best thing about them is that they're versatile. You don't have to necessarily line them up in line. You can put Isaiah Likely in the slot. You can use Mark Andrews or Likely as kind of this H-back type of player as well. So I'm curious to see how that'll unfold, because that's going to be a key part to seeing this passing game go to the next level.
Cordell, real quickly, according to the odds with Joe Burrow coming back, the Bengals are the biggest competition for the Ravens in the division. Is that how you see it? Or if not, is there a dark horse in the division for you?
Yeah, on usual years, I would say that. But right now, you know, honestly, I think this division is so talented. I mean, the Browns looked dead in the water last year until Joe Flacco came along and really revived them and made that defense feel like their efforts weren't wasted. So, you know, we'll see what Deshaun Watson, they get back this year. But I just think defensively, the Browns are really good. And I know Nick Chubb's injury was gruesome, and we'll see what his recovery time is like. But if he's there, that's a big challenge as well. But honestly, I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. I'm looking at them as a team that, you know, you look at the Steelers in years past, they stumble into 10 wins without having a quarterback. So now that they have a couple of quarterbacks now, I'm curious to see what that does for their team. But I think they have the chances to definitely make some noise this year if they're healthy.
Absolutely brutal division, and the teams inside of it all have pretty tough schedules here. While we still have you, Cordell, let's flip over to the Orioles real quick. Right now, three games back in the division, and one of the most interesting questions for me is, what do they do at the trade deadline here? We know how talented their AAA team is, how much young talent they have on this team right now. I'd assume they're going to be buyers. How do you think they try and extend this window that they have for championships right now without necessarily giving up any of these prospects that they really want to see in the major league level?
Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, everybody wants to know, when is Mike Elias going to start letting go of some of these guys? And they did it a little bit on the back end of this past off season to get Corbin Burns in here, traded Joey Ortiz out of there, and they really like him. So I'm curious to see what happens. I think that they're going to go after some arms. They desperately need arms. John Means just went back on the IL right now, and they were in the midst of a six-man rotation last night. Their bullpen kind of is falling apart right now. So they need some help on the back end of the bullpen, and I wouldn't be shocked if they go and get a guy that can kind of be a hybrid in the rotation and in the bullpen as well. But I think they need somebody that can take some walks as well. This lineup has struggled. They're home run or bust. So if they're going to look to be a better on-base type of team, I think they're going to need somebody that can come in here and take some pitches.
Cordell, you're awesome. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
Thanks for having me.
Cordell Woodland, follow him at Cordell Woodland on X. The Orioles plus 230 in the AL East behind only the Yankees, but those odds minus 215 already midway through the first half of the season. We'll be right back, kicking things off in hour two of the Lombardi Line next, recapping the NBA last night and looking ahead to this evening. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are back for a limited time offering our VSiN annual subscription at a discounted price, usually $240. You can grab a full VSiN Pro subscription for just $199. And if you sign up today, we're also giving you an extra 2 months for free. 14 months of VSiN Pro access, less than 50 cents a day, but you need to use our promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, and so much more. Head to vsin.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro, only $199. But again, make sure you use our promo code Lombardi. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside Mike Somich, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And let's keep the NBA talk rolling as we welcome in Tom Byrne on the Progressive Guest Line, SiriusXM NBA host, Mad Dog Radio. He does it all. And we see last night, Jaylen Brown dropping 40. The Celtics take a 2-0 lead, and Tyrese Halliburton's injury certainly throws a wrench into the Pacers' chances to contend. Yeah. You know, what were some of the big standouts for you last night as the Celtics go ahead?
Well, listen, they got off to a lousy start. I figured they might ambush them. You know, first quarter, they didn't even cover. Next thing you know, they go on a 20-0 run in the second quarter. And look, Indiana, let's be very real, guys. I mean, they were lucky in the first round. Milwaukee's missing Giannis, okay? They're missing Dame for a couple games. He's banged up. It was a walk-in mass unit for New York. To me, Indiana's like a 46-47 win team that should be out of the first round, but because of injury luck, here they are. I laid 2.5 games prior to the series, paid $1.50 to do it for the Boston Celtics. Never really regretted it until about, you know, 2 minutes into game one when it was apparent that they were going to lay an egg, obviously, like they did game two against Miami, game two against the Cavs. They are a hard team to trust, but there's a reason why they're power ranked by every respectable model much better than the Indiana Pacers. And now the Halliburton injury, so, you know, you don't know how to play the next game total or side. So I don't know if I'll be getting involved until we get some information. And so we'll have to wait and see on that. Nothing really about last night. I mean, listen, Jaylen Brown does this from time to time. We all know he can play. That's why they gave him the max deal. And what's crazy about the Celtics is the fact that he is arguably many nights their fourth best player, because Derek White has been an unsung hero all year long, obviously. Jason Tatum, for all the disrespect he gets, is a top 10 player in my eyes. Drew Holiday has long been a very good player. He's had to take a step back a little bit, but he's handled that well, played very well in game one. The Celtics have the most talent in the NBA.
I agree with you, Tom. They have the most talent in the NBA, but I also agree with you. They're awfully tough to trust, and that's going to be one of the key things moving forward for them. Let's assume they get by Indiana, which I think most people at this point, being in minus 8,000 favorite, say is a pretty safe assumption. How are they going to be able to ratchet up the playoff intensity after going through three rounds where they have not really been playoff tested and take on one of these teams in the West? Right now, they're perennial favorites against either team coming out of the West. Do you agree with that?
I do. I do make them the favorite myself. It's a fair question about the trust, though, Mike. I mean, 100%. They're a hard team. They're a little like the NBA's version of the Dallas Cowboys, only they've had a little bit more success than Dallas, obviously, in the postseason. But you don't know. You can't put your finger on it, but you don't trust them ultimately in a big spot. Maybe it's because sometimes it's your turn, my turn offensively in big spots. Maybe because Tatum, who is a top 10 player, isn't always the best when it comes to that final possession, shot clock turned off. Look, I'm trying to think, maybe the 87 Laker run. If you remember, Mike, the 87 Laker run, they played three garbage cans on the way to the NBA final, and they beat a team that had the best team in the history of the sport the year prior, arguably. Now, the 87 Celtics were not as good because they were banged up. So let's keep that in mind. I'm not, you know, saying this is the 87 Laker team, but I do think the Celtics should, in theory, be able to do that, but that's a fair concern for sure.
When you look at the big picture with the Mavs and Timberwolves, it seemed like early on everybody was saying, okay, this is going to be the Timberwolves set, and then Luka and Kyrie come together and put on the performance that they did in game one. Now we've seen a flip of favorites in the series. How are you looking at this one?
Yeah, look, I think there's a little value on Dallas coming back again. I made the number 3.2, not to be too technical, but 3.5, and then you know, I'm looking at 5.5, and so I'm glad I waited. I figured there'd be some Minnesota money coming in. I'm a lean there. I'm also a lean on over the total, like game one. Even if you adjust for the pace in the postseason, I think it's fair to say 207 is a little low, so I'm a little surprised that we're still looking at that number. But, hey, listen, Minnesota, they're going to come out with the desperation factor. We know that. We all understand the zigzag theory, and I think we're seeing a lot of that here. Dallas, though, was 6-25 from threes, guys. 6-25. So it's not like one of these games we're going to say, all right, they're due for negative, you know, shot regression. They're not going to shoot that well. You know what? They are going to shoot that well. They're going to shoot even better. And here's the thing. The role players didn't even play all that well, because we knew coming into the series when Minnesota was the big favorite that Dallas had two of the best three players. But it felt like maybe the next three most important players, four most important players beyond those three, would all be off the Minnesota Timberwolves. A little like that Philly Knicks series. We all knew it was Embiid, Brunson, Maxey, but then the next three, four players were all New York Knicks. It had that sort of feel. Dallas won despite the reality that P.J. Washington wasn't nearly as good as he was the prior. I think, look, Derek Lively, he's fine. The plus-minus numbers tell me he should probably be playing a little bit more. But my point is, Dallas didn't even bring their A game, one on the road. I think there's a little value on Dallas tonight with the current number being where it is.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. I played the Mavs +5.5. And a lot of it was that three-point discussion, just 6-25 from three. Luka hit three of those. So just three threes from the rest of the team. And it's a team we saw shoot the ball in Oklahoma City well, with both Derrick Jones Jr. and P.J. Washington having their own playoff game, just wonderful playoff games there where they're able to score convincingly. The three-point ball, I think, is going to be very interesting tonight. We saw, like we said, Dallas go 6-25. We saw Minnesota put up 48 threes in game one. That's the most they've shot all season. Do you expect Edwards specifically to be more aggressive and this Minnesota team to be more aggressive, or is it just going to be a bombardment of threes again?
No, I would think Minnesota's going to look to get to the rim a little bit more. And they don't mind playing in the mid-range some, but I'd be surprised if they shoot the three ball, to your point, as much as they did. And look, they made it for the most part, so you give them credit, but I don't know if they're going to be able to live off that. I'll have my eye on Anthony Edwards. You know, just, of course, sports talk radio goes nuts. Oh, is Anthony Edwards the next Michael Jordan? No, he's not the next Michael Jordan, nor should we ever be talking about that. I mean, let's also be fair about game 7. He was 6-24 in a game, and we all wanted to make a big, wow, he got involved, rebounded, did all this other stuff. Bottom line is he's 6-24. I mean, he didn't play all that well. He didn't play all that well in game 1. So I want to see a little something from Anthony Edwards. We all love great talent, fun to watch, plays bigger than his size, very charismatic, talks smack with a smile on his face. A lot to like, but he also needs to step up, have a big game too. Karl-Anthony Towns has to shoot better. He wants to tell us he's the greatest, you know, shooting big in the history of the sport. Well, Kat, how about you go out there and shoot decently then? And so we'll see if Minnesota has a little spine in this game too. I think they will. It's going to have to start at the defensive end. Good luck, though. This Dallas team, I agree with Mike. I said it myself, 5.5. I mean, Luka is going to be Luka. He's the best player in this. There's no doubt. He's the best player in this series. And if Kyrie is going to be able to keep this up, and I do think it's sustainable, and they get some help, Dallas could be going to the final against Boston. That'd be interesting. Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving back in Boston, where they're not exactly a big fan.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Just wait, though. The Timberwolves, let's say they go on and somehow find a way to not only win this series, but win an NBA title. The Anthony Edwards comps and the Jordan stuff is just going to blow up. He's 22 years old. He's already got his first one.
Yeah, and listen, in theory, if that happens, that's still possible. I mean, geez, you know how this goes. The narrative will completely flip if they win tonight. Well, I guess we're all back on Minnesota. That's how the media goes. But you're right, because and then if they win in the NBA Finals, man, that assumes Anthony Edwards has a monster series. At least the conversation's a little more warranted, but even then, it would be way too premature. But we all love to do that. We're all looking for the next Jordan. We're all looking for the next LeBron. It's something everybody loves. They say they hate talking about it, but then they can't wait to pick up the phone and call me about it, so I don't believe them.
It feels like this is going to be a big conversation piece. Are going to be Anthony Edwards, the next Jordan, and then that Gobert trade, whether or not all of a sudden we think it was a good trade 2 years later, if they're able to get a title off of it. Now, you mentioned the Mavs role players. We talked about them last segment. And I talked specifically about P.J. Washington and Derek Jones Jr. Okay. P.J. Washington's point prop is sitting at 11.5. Derek Jones Jr., 8.5 in this game. Do you like either of those players to go over their points props?
If I played one, I think I'd take P.J. Washington. That one makes a little bit more sense to me. He's going to get some looks at the corner three. When Luka and Kyrie are collapsing, they'll be able to kick out. I don't know. They might close out harder, and he could attack that closeout too. So you keep in mind, P.J. Washington's a pretty good player. If you're in Charlotte, you're wondering why he wasn't a little more consistent like he's been in this particular uniform. But whatever. I mean, I would go to over 11.5. I'd have to see what the juice is. I haven't looked at that number of late. But to answer your question generally, Derek Jones Jr. is an important piece. You know, he's very good with his athleticism. He's a long, very good defender, perimeter, can switch everything. But I think offensively, even with the number obviously being, 3 points higher in this case, I'd go put P.J. Washington over.
Yeah, had 13 in game one, hit a couple of triples. Tom, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you and have fun on the postgame tonight.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Tom Byrne, SiriusXM NBA Radio, of course, Mad Dog Sports Radio as well. But you got some more Mavs love, more Mavs confirmation bias, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good or bad. You never know with confirmation bias in the gambling circle. But excited to hear someone else who's clearly tuned in to likes the Mavs tonight.
Yeah, no question about it. Okay, you hear that music. That means we got to take a quick timeout. But when we come back, we'll get a couple of MLB plays from Mike Somich and my moment to talk UFL. We got NBA and NHL postseason, but we've also got spring football, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Somich with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. We are so close to crowning an NBA champion. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. If you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Speaking of the NBA, huge game two in the Western Conference Finals coming up tonight. The Mavericks getting 5.5 after winning game one in Minnesota, total 207.5. And let's just rehash here as we head out, Mike, why you like Dallas to cover once again tonight.
I'm surprised the number went up a full point here. I understand that, the zigzag theory, the Timberwolves, you're expecting a better performance in game two. It was a tough spot in game one coming off game seven. But I don't feel like the Mavericks played their A game in that spot. Just 6 for 25 from three. Just three of those 3-pointers came from role players. Anyone outside of Luka Doncic. So to me, the Mavericks have some upside here. And the Timberwolves, I think, need to figure out what to do on the defensive end with Irving and Doncic, because they didn't really have an answer in game one. And I think that's going to be a struggle for them. And I think it's going to allow the role players on the Mavericks to get some better looks in this spot. So I like the Mavs plus 5.5. I thought this should be in that 4, 4.5 range. I still think you're getting some value on Dallas.
Yeah, I think I might come join you on that as well. And you're going back to the well in National Hockey League today as well. You love those first period unders. The Florida Panthers came through with a 3-0 win in New York against the Rangers for game one. -112 today on the road once again, like a near pick'em game for this one in game two. Final thoughts there?
Yeah, give me the Panthers at -112. This is a better version of Carolina, and I thought Carolina played this Rangers team really tough. They dominated them from a shots perspective. We saw the same thing in game one, where the Rangers only managed 12 shots through the first two periods and only had one shot on goal in the first 8 minutes of the third when they were down 1-0 and you were expecting a push. Panthers defense has been absolutely phenomenal. I think we're going to see a push from the Rangers in the first period, but the Panthers should be able to keep it toward the outside. I think that leads to a first period under here. So I'll take the first period under a goal and a half, -130. And I think the Panthers just keep it rolling. So let's take the Panthers here at -112. I think they should be closer to -125, -130 in this spot.
And also a reminder for anybody who missed the very start of the show when we were talking about the Oilers and Stars series as Edmonton gets away with one yesterday after letting up a 2-goal lead. You said, instead of saying, okay, no, I'm out on Dallas, you believed in them prior to last night's loss, and you doubled down on them again after yesterday.
Yeah, I took Dallas to win the series at some plus money. If you look at any of the simulations, Dallas wins the majority of the time in game one. If you look at the expected goals, Dallas had a higher expected goal total there. I didn't think Dallas played their best game, and they still were right there, and it arguably outplayed Edmonton for the majority of that contest. So I'm willing to take a shot on Dallas here. We saw them come back from down 0-2 to the Golden Knights, who I think were a better team than this Oilers team. So happy to still take Dallas here plus money in the series.
Back in the two Dallas teams in their respective conference finals, and like we joked about yesterday, it seems to be going great in Dallas for all major professional sports, unless you're the Dallas Cowboys on a 28 conference final slump. Can't seem to make that NFC title game. I don't know what it is. Oh, the San Francisco 49ers have stood in their way a couple times, which I will admit I have reveled in that a little bit because I was programmed from a very young age to despise the Dallas Cowboys. I had one of those old helmet set checkers boards that was 49ers versus Cowboys, and I would have to play with the Cowboys when I was being punished. So that should give you a little perspective into my childhood. Okay, enough of the serious stuff, Michael. We've got to get even more serious here because anybody that knows you knows that you somehow, some way, are good at handicapping just about everything. In addition to what we just talked about in the NBA and NHL, you're great with the NFL. You're our resident horse racing expert. I call you on the 4th of July. You got a guy for the hot dog eating contest. It's amazing. So we put you to the ultimate test today, throwing some random sports your way, and you found a way to handicap these, and you placed a couple of bets as well. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the one that I bet on. So let's start here with the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Competition, which is coming up. And this is actually a huge deal in Ireland. I didn't realize this, that the Gaelic Athletic Association established this in 1887. They've done this one year or every single year except for one year since then. So this is one that's very important over there in Ireland. You can watch this on BBC. It's streaming on BBC Online if you'd like to. And the winner five of the last 6 years and four in a row has been Limerick. It has been their 12th title over the time. Kilkenny has been another team that's been very good. They've got the most titles for this in 36. Limerick -130 right now as the favorite. And I actually came in and I bet Limerick after going through this and checking this one out. This is a situation where because of the player pool, you don't have a ton of turnover in these teams. I mentioned Limerick's won five of the last 6 years. They've had four MVPs in this tournament. All four are still on the team this year. Their coach is still there as well. He's won all those titles with them too. And when you look through this, they deserve to be a favorite. And I thought it was interesting that you can go back through the history of the Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship, and you see these consistent runs by teams because you don't see a bunch of player movement inside of these. So the Final Four has been the same the last 2 years. Those are your four favorites again this year. And to me, Limerick coming back here, it has the best team once again. You can find them overseas as high as -160 to win this, but right now just 130 at DraftKings. I think there's some value here in the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship to take Limerick. So I actually bet this one. I took some Limerick at -130, Stormy.
Unbelievable. You're my idol. By the way, this matchup, the title tilt coming up May 26th at 9 Eastern. But I was looking through some highlights here, and it is interesting because it looks kind of like a lacrosse paddle, but instead of a net, it's all made out of wood. There's not pads going on. It's kind of like a soccer type goal. Very, very interesting sport. When I first looked through this list, I was like, oh, curling. I didn't know that was going on in the summer. But no, not curling. Hurling. Unbelievable. Okay, Limerick minus 130. Let's now turn our gears to the Street League Skateboarding Apex 2 coming up on the 25th. What did you find there?
I thought this was the most difficult one to handicap of the four. So first off, whenever you're looking at a new sport, you got to look at the how it's contested. This is a single elimination bracket tournament, which is interesting in skateboarding because you know what, Stormy? It's easy to fall down. You do that, you lose.
True.
So you got to look at consistency and how people are coming into the event. Your favorite right now is Yuto Horigomi. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. But I don't love how he's coming into this event. He had an early exit in San Diego. He was 17th in Shanghai. He's 25 years old. Japanese guy has all the tricks, but I'm not sure he has the consistency to win this style of tournament. Nyjah Hushin, who's the veteran here coming in, he podiumed in both Shanghai and Paris, was 12th in San Diego. I like him a little bit more. He's plus 180 right now as a second choice. But if I was going to bet this, I'm going to take a little bit of a shot. This kind of reminds me of college basketball in a way where you can have upsets because it is single elimination, single bracket tournament. Give me Deshaun Jordan here, sitting anywhere from 8-1 to 9-1, depending on where you're looking at. He finished 9th in San Diego. He was 6th in Tampa. He seems like he's in form right now. And I want to take a little bit of a price because of the style of this specific event.
Real quickly, because we do pro tips here at VSiN every show, each and every day. You can search them on VSiN.com by sport and by show. But you mentioned this being the most difficult handicap of the group that we gave you here. Can you take us a little bit just into your process and what it's like having to do this research for a sport you haven't been involved in before?
Well, I thought this was actually a really good exercise for someone who does have a bunch of sports that I will bet. A lot of times I walk in and I don't start from scratch on the baseball side, on the NFL side, in basketball, because I have a preconceived bias, preconceived notion. So this was a really good exercise for me to kind of take it back to the foundation of betting and where you begin. And it starts out of understanding the event, making sure you understand where the ins and outs are, the rules are. And that's one of the reasons why I thought this Street League Skateboarding was a tough one, because the rules specifically play toward underdogs. But that's important to look at when you're handicapping. So I think it's a good exercise for anyone who gambles to kind of take one of these events every month, every other month, and start from scratch and look at what you do well, what you need to work on, because I do think it helps get rid of biases in a lot of these specific scenarios.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And with that, so there's two more I want to hit you with. Which one of these going through it did you feel a better level of confidence? The Hockey World Championship with Switzerland and Canada coming up tomorrow, or next week's Overwatch Championship Series?
We're going to go to the Overwatch Championship Series here, Stormy. I like Switzerland plus the goal and a half, minus 155, but minus 155 is not fun. So let's talk a little gaming here.
Love it.
Look, the Asian teams have dominated, and this is a situation where you've got two Asian teams taking on six American teams in a double elimination bracket. The Asian teams are Team Falcons and the Crazy Raccoon. Crazy Raccoons, right now your favorite in this spot. They faced each other in Asia, and Team Falcons won in the upper bracket final, but ended up losing in the final to Crazy Raccoon. I'll take a price here with Team Falcons plus 200. We've seen them beat Crazy Raccoon before, and the draw for Crazy Raccoon is tougher. Toronto Defiant and M80, two of the better U.S. squads, both in their half. So let's go with Team Falcons at plus 200.
We put Mike Somich to the test. Can he cap it? And the answer, 4 out of 4, was yes. Well done, my friend. Kudos.
That was fun. I'm excited to see if we're able to cash these. I did bet Limerick. I did not bet any of the others, just so everyone knows. I think there's some value on Limerick, but there are the leans in the other three, if you will.
Limerick minus 130. And well done to our producers, Stephanie Kamershack and Justin Emery, for finding those bad boys for you, for putting in the work and getting the handicap done. Awesome stuff. This was a blast today. So appreciate you. Make sure, everybody, you check out VSiN's The Handle with Mike Somich and Matt Brown tomorrow and Sunday. That's a wrap for us. Have a great day. Good luck with your bets.